Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Welcome to DW's Africa Link. This Thursday, September the 21st. I am Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. Thank you for joining us.
In the next 15 minutes, Uganda's parliament postpones a bill to remove presidential age limit amid a tense moment in parliament.
No single individual can build a country. It is institutions that can build countries. And therefore, we stand our position that there must be no amendment to the constitution.
Germany's first African member of parliament fights hate speech in the run-up to Sunday's parliamentary election.
Das heißt, es wird immer wieder darauf berufen, dass wenn man jemanden bedroht, wenn man jemanden beleidigt, wenn man...
Some people threaten and insult others and then say, that's freedom of opinion. I say no.
We will bring you these stories and much more from the comments you have left on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
But first, here is a chance to hear what's been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Kenya's Electoral Commission has announced that the presidential rerun has been rescheduled for October 26th. The commission had originally set the rerun election date for October 17th. This comes after Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta criticized the Supreme Court decision to hold new polls, saying its decision to nullify his August 8th presidential win was a blow to democratic ideals. Kenyatta delivered his remarks on national television.
We have seen military coups overthrow civilian governments, but today we have broken our history in that a coup in the Republic of Kenya was committed by four people in the courts. This is a coup, and I must call it what it is, and I can never be afraid to say it.
An African National Congress member of parliament quit South Africa's ruling party on Thursday. Makosi Koza told reporters she quit President Jacob Zuma's party due to the growing number of scandals he has attracted during his 8 years in power. In July, she labeled Zuma a dishonorable and disgraceful leader. Zuma has been accused of using his political influence to secure lucrative contracts with state-run companies. U.S. President Donald Trump has addressed the state of Africa's business, saying during a speech at the United Nations General Assembly in New York that Africa, despite its security concerns, has huge business potential.
Africa has tremendous business potential. I have so many friends going to your countries trying to get rich. I congratulate you. They're spending a lot of money. But it does. It has a tremendous business potential.
This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Police in Togo said they are preparing for nationwide protest after opposition members said they would demonstrate for a second consecutive day against the rule of President Faure Gnassingbé, the descendant of Africa's oldest political dynasty. Gnassingbé took over power in 2005 after succeeding his father, who ruled for nearly four decades. Tens of thousands of demonstrators took to the streets in capital Lomé on Wednesday. One person died and at least 25 people were reportedly injured. Police in Uganda have reportedly arrested opposition members and dispersed protesters amid parliamentary preparations to vote on removing the presidential age limit. Under the current law, a person over 75 cannot run for president. Longtime leader Yoweri Museveni, who is 73 years old, has expressed interest in running again at the end of his term in 2021. And now in Bundesliga football news, Dortmund are atop the table after defeating Hamburger last night by the score of 3-0. Hoffenheim also won, beating Mainz 3-2. Hertha Berlin won 2-1 against Bayer Leverkusen. And finally, Eintracht Frankfurt handed Cologne their fifth loss in a row, beating the bottom club 1-0. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shane Meineke.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Abubakar Jalo. Let's begin the program in Uganda, where the much-anticipated debate on the controversial amendment of Article 102B to lift the presidential age limit has not made it to the parliament business today. But much to the surprise of many, Deputy Speaker of Parliament Jacob Oyunlanya told the usually packed house, that they will be informed on the matter when the appropriate time comes up. Frank Higa filed this report from Kampala, now presented by Jane Ayeko Kumet.
Uganda's parliament was unusually full this afternoon as legislators eagerly awaited a motion to present a private member's bill to lift the presidential age limit. The motion was not on the order paper, but as soon as the session started, the entire house was thrown into curfews. After a series of heckles that nearly led members to physically fight, the Speaker of Parliament was forced to adjourn the house. The leader of opposition in Parliament, Winnie Kiza, from the Forum for Democratic Change Party, demanded an explanation on the heavy security presence in and around Parliament.
I was almost dropping dead when I heard that the Speaker of Parliament could not be allowed access in the main entrance of Parliament. It is something we need to take seriously, and members of Parliament, it's our duty to ensure that we defend the freedom of Parliament.
Outside Parliament, opposition members clad in red ribbons and headscarves roamed around amid a siege by the military and the police. They were evidently in an opposition mood. But why the red color?
This one shows the situation which is here today. A situation of danger, a situation of bloodshed. The whole of Parliament is surrounded by soldiers, and more so the military police are roaming around the whole city of Kampala.
MP Funguru Kaps Hassan from Obongi County in Arua District. His bitterness was echoed by some NRM members of parliament who equally were against the move. Achidiri James from Marach East is one of them.
No single individual can build a country. It is institutions that can build countries. And therefore we stand our position that there must be no amendment to the constitution so that we have a peaceful transfer of power.
And for most Ugandans, it was clear that it was not going to be business as usual in their parliament today. It was no surprise that Kampalans woke up to a heavily militarized city. Several arrests were made, including the arrest of the city mayor Elias Lukwago and some Makerere University students.
And that report was compiled by Frank Yiga in Kampala.
And Abu, a mix of reactions here. Boache in Ghana says Uganda should not have age limit to the presidency, but entrenched terms should be set for the ruling government. For example, our president is over 75 years plus and he's creative.
Yeah, and we have Kanjo from Cameroon says only revolutions can force African dictators out of office. It has begun in Togo.
Caleb Chauro from Nairobi says if it takes to change the constitution so as to retain power, then most African countries, we are in trouble. Why don't we respect the constitution and give others space to lead our nations? We'll come back with more of your comments whenever we can. To Mexico now, where more than 230 people have now been confirmed dead after Tuesday's earthquake. Rescue workers are frantically searching for survivors trapped in the rubble of collapsed buildings. One of the most desperate rescue efforts is underway at a primary school in Mexico City. DW spoke to Mark Devlin, UNICEF's chief operation officer, to find out how much impact the earthquake has had on children. Take a listen.
It has a huge impact. You can imagine the school building that you're referring to, a three-story building, collapses down like a sandwich. It's an incredibly shocking experience, not just for children who are in that building and survive, but for children who witness it. You know, their whole world is literally collapsing around them. So this can have long-lasting effects, and it's very important that normality is restored as quickly as possible. So in the days and weeks ahead, we'll be trying to support schools to get re-established. A number of schools have been destroyed, approximately 200 in Mexico City. So it's very important that children quickly, if they're well enough to do so, get back into some kind of normal routine that begins to re-establish some sense of balance and order in their lives after a very traumatic event like this. Obviously, there will also be children who are currently separated from their families as a result of the incident, so they need more specific care and attention. But generally, the approach is to establish safe areas for the children and establish normality as quickly as possible.
Mark Devlin, UNICEF's chief operation officer, speaking from London.
Now, here in Germany, we meet Karamba Jabi, who is Germany's first African-born Member of Parliament and is fighting to be re-elected. Despite threats and racist insults, Jabi is determined and he is not giving up. DW's Daniel Pels met Jabi in his hometown of Halle. His report is now being presented by Jake Davis.
For Karamba Jabi, this could be the perfect day for last-minute campaigning. The autumn sun is shining brightly, and scores of potential voters are strolling through the city centre of his hometown of Halle. 55-year-old Jabi, a Member of Parliament for the Social Democratic Party, or SPD, since 2013, is participating in an open-air debate with members of a youth initiative. But he is interrupted by a man in a worn-out green sports suit, and that led into fiery exchanges. This is, however, nothing new to the Senegalese-born, who shocked the country in the last elections when he won the Bundestag parliamentary seat in Halle. Now, he said the number of attacks has increased.
In social media, dass wenn man seine politische Positionen verbreitet.
The tone has gotten a lot rougher. Many discussions on social media aren't conducted in a fair manner. There are attempts to intimidate and silence elected representatives and other members of the public.
Aber auch andere einzuschüchtern und dann mundtot zu machen.
Since the government opened up the borders to some 800,000 refugees 2 years ago, the atmosphere in some areas has heated up. Right-wing protesters try to disrupt rallies, especially campaigns like his. Such tense exchange is one of the more harmless encounters for the politician, known as Germany's first black African-born MP. For the last several months, he has been the subject of a racist online campaign of the far-right NPD party. Last month, NPD posted a photo of one of his campaign posters on its Facebook page with a post.
That's what the SPD calls representative of the German people.
Commentators on the page called him a black monkey and used the N-word. Jabi decided to fight back. He wrote on his Facebook page,
"To all racists, I am not your Negro."
And filed criminal charges against the far-right party.
Das heißt, es wird immer wieder darauf berufen, dass wenn man jemanden bedroht, wenn man jemanden beleidigt, wenn man...
Some people threaten and insult others and then say, that's freedom of opinion. I say, no, that has nothing to do with freedom of opinion.
Ich sage, nein, das hat mit Meinungsfreiheit nichts zu tun.
Jabi, he has become a sort of local celebrity. He cannot walk on Halle's cobbled stone streets for long before a greeting is flying his way.
Was ich schätze an Herrn Karamba, dass ehrlich, offen ist, ein sehr guter Politiker ist.
He's honest, open-minded and a great politician. But unfortunately, he belongs to the wrong party.
Man kann mit ihnen über alle Sachen reden, er ist da sehr offen.
That was Ronald Müller, a long-time resident of Halle who is in his 50s. Müller respects Jabi, even though he doesn't support his party's position. Struggling against the odds is something of a key theme in Jabi's life. He lost his parents at an early age in Senegal, and came to Germany in 1985 on a scholarship to study chemistry. He learned German, made the eastern city of Halle his home after marrying a fellow German student, and worked hard to find a job after finishing his studies.
And that report was compiled by Daniel Pels from the eastern German city of Halle. Now, Isaac, we have a lot of responses to our top story, the Ugandan parliamentary debate today.
Yeah, the parliament, you know, erupted in chaos, and so the presidential edge bill wasn't discussed. To begin with, Kenneth Tete Kwao from Accra says, well, practically, if a leader is performing well in terms of governance, why should there be a protest against his term of office anyway?
We have David from Nigeria, and he says he's based in Malaysia. He says it's had a bad character for any leader wanting to use the position of the office of the president as his or family property or company.
Andres Malama says, I love Africa, full of selfish leaders, so are we going to just keep on asking for money from outside while a leader is putting all the resources in his pockets?
Prince Mayor says, that's African leaders for you. It hurts me so much. Buhari of Nigeria would also want to do that if he has a chance given.
Mumuni Razak from Ghana also says, so if after being power for the past 30 years and you have still not groomed anybody to take over from you, then that is failure of leadership. Keep those comments flowing up. They're so interesting.
That's all we could accommodate for now. Keep it up, Galink.
Yeah. And in case you're just tuning in, this is DW's Africa Link program. Welcome once again. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Abubakar Jallo.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, a Somali computer geek who wants to be the next Bill Gates with her new innovation, the Frank Phone.
I've got my laptop in here, my monitor, a little desk just so I could think up stuff. Got some drawers where I store all my little gadgets and whatnot, and drawings and papers and whatnot. So it's not the most high-tech place in the world, but it's got everything I need to be able to create what I want to do.
And the Committee to Protect Journalists condemns Cameroon in its latest report for using anti-terrorism laws to gag the media in the country. These stories plus all of your responses coming up shortly.
That's right indeed, Abu. But first, let's head to Liberia, where the coastal waters of the Atlantic have threatened to obliterate the country's largest slum of West Point. Due to climate change, the West Point slum is slowly being wiped away by sea erosion. And so far, 3,000 people have been displaced, the majority being women and children. From Monrovia, Evelyn Padesabe reports.
The raging sounds of the Atlantic Ocean gets more terrifying during the night. As night falls, feminists living near the shore of the ocean go to bed terrified that their homes could be washed away by the sea that is getting closer to human settlement because of climate change. 51-year-old Christiana Harris is a single mother of eight. Her house has partly been destroyed by the sea erosion, such that she had to send some of her children to spend night with friends and family members.
From day one, I brought all my nine living children here.
All my life, this is where I have lived. This is the third home that the sea has demolished. So I'm just tired and frustrated. I've just decided to ask my friends for help until I can raise enough money to rent a room for my children and I. At night, the sea becomes really scary. Some people even sleep in the open because they're afraid their houses will be washed away.
Despite the danger of staying close to the ocean, Christiana cannot afford leaving West Point because this is where she earns her living from making fish sales.
It's okay for me to stay here, because if the government relocates us, how will I survive with my children? Where am I going to get food from? I wouldn't be able to pay for transport all the time to go to West Point to dry and sell my fish, which enables us to survive. I can't afford to leave West Point.
West Point Commissioner Williams Dennis described the poor living condition of his people as a result of the erosion.
The sea erosion affected the community.
Sea erosion has affected at least 1,000 homes in the community. The condition is really bad. Women and children have been the most affected because West Point is densely populated. If you get to the beach, someone can tell you that the sea was many miles away and has come up this close. A large portion of the township is now covered by water, and it is scary.
West Point, being surrounded by the Atlantic Ocean and the Monserrato River, is at high risk of being completely wiped away. As such, the Department of Government responsible for disaster believes a total relocation of West Point dwellers who saved their lives, as explained by Augustine Colley from the Ministry of Internal Affairs.
West Point, in its entirety, is threatened by the sea and then the river. So, in fact, if we speak from our own experience and then our own expertise, we'll tell you that nobody should even live in West Point. It's threatened as we speak.
For now, Christiana Harris and her eight children can only wait for the government's intervention that is favorable to their well-being and hope that their homes cannot be washed away by the water of the Atlantic.
Our contributor in Monrovia, Evelyn Pade-Siabe.
And we have a response from our usual contributor as well. From Monrovia, Isaac Godwin says, it's disappointing to see that West Point region is gradually losing his hand and community due to the sea erosion. Government has banned citizens from taking the sea sand from the shores to trade, because in recent years, he went on and on to say about the sand trading that's been happening along this West Point area.
Exactly, yeah. Joel Vomo says, poverty is widespread And these are just normal living conditions in lots of places in Africa, even here in Tanzania. We still have lots more coming up for you. And remember to visit our Facebook page, DW Africa. We'll be right back after this.
Use on. Now, could he be the next Bill Gates, Elon Musk, or a cell phone magnate turned humanitarian, Mo Ibrahim? Mo Omar of Ottawa, Canada, is just 17 and he's a self-professed tech nerd. When his mother said she could not afford to buy him an expensive phone, he came up with his own phone called Frank, costing as low as 180 Canadian dollars. He and Frank co-founder, 25-year-old Fahad Al-Hattab, who Mo described as old, hope to give it to the big guys. They are currently trying to raise $250,000 through a crowdfunding site to get the first phones made and are already 25% of the way there. Sean Griffiths met Mo at home where he lives with his Somali-born mother, Sadia, and his two older sisters.
I'm visiting the Omer family home located in Ottawa in Canada. Mo ushers me into his creative space, his bedroom. It has a small wooden desk, a small bed, and a wall full of hockey memorabilia.
It's not very high tech, is it? What's in here?
No, it's pretty bare bones, but it's got what I need. I've got my laptop in here, my monitor, a little desk just so I could think up stuff. Got some drawers where I store all my little gadgets and whatnot, and drawings and papers and whatnot. So it's not the most high-tech place in the world, but it's got everything I need to be able to create what I want to do.
It's clear he's sports mad. He's got a shelf full of trophies.
And this is for hockey, soccer, more soccer. Even though hockey is my favorite sport, I've got volleyball, basketball, a speech I did. I'm a huge sports fan. I'm a diehard Ottawa Senators fan.
Despite his love for sports, he still found time to develop a new cheap smartphone after his mother Sadia, who works as a cook in a home for the elderly, said no to a $1,000 smartphone.
Because I'm a huge tech nerd, so I've got like a billion phones stored everywhere around here. So it's always kind of something I'm kind of thinking about. And I guess here's where I actually started thinking, you know what? I might as well start working on it. If it doesn't work out, who cares? And if it does, all the better. And I didn't think I was actually going to go forward with it, but I ended up doing that.
He shows me his innovation and gives me a taste of his sales pitch.
So this is the Frank phone. It's an aluminum unibody high-tech phone. It's got 16-megapixel camera on the back, dual LED lights on the back, and it's got fingerprint sensor on the front, which you don't find in budget phones, USB-C on the bottom, which is the new standard for charging, which will make this a lot future-proof. We've got our speakers. So it's got everything you'd find in a normal, expensive $1,000 phone. It just doesn't cost nearly as much. And it's running stock Android, so you can open all the apps like you normally would, and you won't have any issues.
Please, I want you to eat food. Remember yourself first. Remember to eat food.
I will do my best.
Do your best and don't be a picky eater.
That's Mo's mum, Sadia, a single mother originally from Somalia. Although she worries that her son doesn't eat enough, she's hugely proud of him.
As a toddler, you know, young children, they always watch cartoons and all those funny things. Mo never wanted those ones. He straight used to take the remote control. He learned how to change the channels. He was about a year old.
She says he takes after Somali grandfather in Mogadishu, who Mo has only met over Skype. He had businesses selling furniture, clothing, and movie rentals.
So he laughed. He said, okay, it looks like this is me. I say, yes, what I see for every aspect is you. The business part, not eating food, that's exactly you. And he laughs, you know.
Was she surprised when, age 15, he told her he wanted to start a company and, by the way, would she mind co-signing the paperwork because he wasn't old enough?
Yeah, I said, what am I co-signing? A phone. And I said, okay, no problem, because I trust him and I know what he does. So he does really very well. And also he's a very responsible child.
For now, Sadia will be holding on to his company shares until he is over 18. But at 17, Mo is already a veteran businessman. He began a hockey apparel business at 13, for which he won a Young Entrepreneur Award.
Sean Griffith presented that report from Ottawa, Canada, about the 17-year-old Somali kid who invented his own mobile phone.
Yeah, it's interesting. And he has a pat on the back from someone called Oladi Jimali Abdi, also from Somalia, but currently residing in Germany. He says, "Well done, Mo Omer. Somalis are vibrant entrepreneurs." That's something positive, I mean, for the young geek to go by if he listens.
Speaking out.
Now, Cameroon has described as baseless a report released by the Committee to Protect Journalists, CPJ, that accuses authorities of using anti-terror laws to silence critics and suppress dissent. CPJ says the government has used the laws to arrest and threaten media organizations that report on the Boko Haram insurgency or controversial topics like the ongoing strike in English-speaking regions. Mokinzeka reports from Yaounde.
Cameroon's communication minister Issa Chiruma has said journalists in the country are free to report on any matter, but that the country is not ready to be subdued by any pressure from groups like the Committee to Protect Journalists.
I would like to defy and challenge whoever can prove, can demonstrate that we have a journalist who, in the exercise of their profession, has been arrested and judged and put in prison because they exercise their profession. I challenge whoever to prove and to demonstrate it.
The report cites Ahmed Abba, RFI's Hausa correspondent, who was arrested under Cameroon terrorism law and given a 10-year jail sentence by a military tribunal after nearly 2 years in custody. But Issa Chiruma says he was arrested for collaborating with the terrorists.
As far as this journalist is concerned, he was arrested red-handed in violation of our law. And the infringement of the law is known by all. If you infringe the law, you know the result of it. All nations who have been fighting against terrorism, they have the law to protect the physical integrity of their nation.
Bruno Kwemo of the Cameroon Union of Journalists says authorities introduced capital punishments for involvement in terror attacks or complicity in terrorism in 2014 because they are afraid of journalists reporting freely on events happening in the country.
A journalist is not a criminal, and as a trade union, we are asking our members to strictly respect both ethics and professional norms.
The Committee to Protect Journalists is calling for the revision of the law and the functioning of the National Communication Council that suspended at least 30 journalists, radio and TV programs, and media organs since the crisis in the English-speaking regions began last year. But Peter Isoka, the council president, says they suspended the media outlets in line with the main objective of the council, which is to regulate the practice of journalism in Cameroon.
When a journalist comes up with a newspaper article and says a certain minister is known to be running with the prime minister's wife, how do you take that? It's indecent. It is indecent. How does that help the society? In any way, the media are supposed to play a very, very important role in its development. But then when we take on trivial things and say rubbish about lots and lots and lots and lots of things, it hurts the heart.
Cameroon has about 600 newspapers, 200 radio, TV and online stations, and 15 news websites.
Mokinzeka reporting, and a comment from Abdullahi in Kaduna, Nigeria, says Cameroon, with its tight leadership, just like in Zimbabwe, does not follow the rule of law. My advice to dissenters is lie low and bid your time.
And we have Parsi for Lemu in Cameroon, says the Cameroon government is one of the most chronic dictatorships in the world. We can expect nothing good from them. And let me take you to an interesting story. First of all, a question for you, Isaac. Have you ever been to Namibia?
Perhaps that's the new country after South Sudan. Tell me more.
It's actually Well, a country that U.S. President Donald Trump invented while he was addressing a bunch of African leaders at the U.N. General Assembly in New York. Mm. He was basically referring there to Namibia.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, he intended Namibia, and then he said Nambia.
Another confefe.
And the rest of Twitter was torn apart because of that comment. Anyway, quick one here from Joe Black. He says, finally, some recognition for the long-suffering people of Nambia. I bet you all can't even find it on the map. That's all we have time for. My name is Abubakar Jallo.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe.
Bye now.